Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th Canto, Chapter 20, The Dynasty of Puru, Texts 38 and 39. Mude Bharadvajam Imam Bharadvajam Brahaspate Yatayadukta Pitaro Bharadvajastatastrayam.
Translation. Brihaspati said to Mamata, "You foolish woman, although this child was born from the wife of one man through the semen discharged by another, you should maintain him." Upon hearing this, Mamata replied, "O Brihaspati, you maintain him." After speaking in this way, Brihaspati and Mamata both left. Thus the child was known as Bharadvaja. Text 39. Although encouraged by the demigods to maintain the child, Mamata considered him useless because of his illicit birth, and therefore she left him. Consequently, the demigods, known as the Maruts, maintained the child, and when Maharaj Bharat was disappointed for want of a child, this child was given to him as his son. Purport. From this verse, it is understood that those who are rejected from the higher planetary system are given a chance to take birth in the most exalted families on this planet Earth. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 9th canto, 20th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Dynasty of Puru. Om Agana Timirandasya, Gyananjana Shalakaya, Chakshun Militam Yena, Tasmai Sri Guruvena. Jai Shri Krishna Jai Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasudevi Gaur Bhaktavinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. This is a complicated history concerning both the heavenly planets and Earth. So, Mars, Bharat, he's an earthling. And since most of you don't know what happened a few verses ago, we will explain, because this is an interplanetary history. The Bhagavatam, of course, does not take seriously at all contemporary human beings' idea that only Earth may contain intelligent life. In fact, Srimad Bhagavatam presents accounts of happenings far beyond planet Earth amongst persons who are far more intelligent than human beings. Sometimes it is said, an ordinary saying, which has appropriate application. What is the proof that there is life? What's the proof that there is intelligent life on other planets? Because they've never bothered to contact Earth. There's truth to that ordinary saying, because in this age of Kali, the demigods are no longer visible. What tribals encounter are just primitive nature spirits, but they're not the demigods, as sometimes mistakenly considered. They're ordinary forest spirits, tree spirits, ghosts, so on and so forth. But the demigods are not visible in the age of Kali because no one's performing yajna. No one is performing sacrifice. The whole system of the material world is based on Yajnavai Vishnu, sacrifice for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That system has been broken. And now we have the idea that this material world is a gift to us emerging from random chaos. And the gift is for our enjoyment, that's all. We have no sense of indebtedness to a supreme proprietor. We have no concept of the supreme enjoyer. All we know is that we have these temporary bodies, we have this temporary world, meaning the earth planet, And we should somehow or other try to fulfill ourselves, try to enjoy ourselves. That's the meaning of life. When Srimad Bhagavatam presents these interplanetary histories, it's broadening your scope for understanding the material world and the spiritual world. There are three main abodes, or you could actually say four. Lowest of all is Devi Dham, the realm of Maya Devi, the illusory potency of the Lord. This is the abode that we have taken shelter of due to our mistaken rebellious desires. Because we have an uncontrolled mind, we perpetuate our material existence. 99% of our problems can be traced to an uncontrolled mind. The process of bhakti focuses the mind on what is favorable for Krishna's service. We are so habituated, birth after birth, to thinking what's good for my mind and my senses, as if we exist separate from Krishna. So one accepts a spiritual master to learn how to render favorable service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, regardless of the dictations of our mind. You can see that even in ordinary mundane relationships, people's mind disturbs everything. When someone's mind feels unfulfilled or ungratified, then even in an ordinary relationship, that person's mind manifests through the body and causes a tumult. Our spiritual life is meant to be a gradual process for taming the mad mind. Otherwise, our mind causes us to make so many offenses, and then our spiritual life is extinguished. We have to be very careful in our bhakti life that our mind doesn't get out of control and cause us to offend devotees, and in this way ruin our spiritual life. Because the planetary-wide system of yajna has been disrupted, you don't see the devas. They have no interest in becoming visible. You can read in the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, for example, during the time of Kritu Maharaj, the ideal king, he could make a yajna, he could make a huge sacrifice, and the demigods would appear, even Vishnu would appear. Celestial, heavenly, saintly personalities like the four Kumaras would appear at his yajna. This is real government. Let us see the government leader who can arrange his society in such a way that Brahma appears, Vishnu appears, Shiva appears, the four Kumaras appear and give lectures. Let us see that. This is the point. This is the real standard of government. And Srimad Bhagavatam is making us aware of that. So we are not so much worried about UFO controversies, alien invasion controversies. We consider human beings on Earth in the age of Kali to be quite alien and quite strange. And we are them. Because of our mad mind, we put ourselves in such a rare situation that pure spirit soul is subordinate to the material energy. This is a completely unprecedented, or shall we say, unusual situation. Ordinarily, it shouldn't happen, but by Krishna's arrangement, one potency can overcome another potency, even though the overcome potency is superior, because Krishna is the master of all the potencies. Vishnu Shakti Para Prokta. All the potencies are Vishnu Shakti. So Krishna can manipulate his energies as he likes. The Bhagavatam is seeking to give us an interplanetary frame of reference so you can understand this Devi Dham, the abode of those bewildered by the material energy. And then, above that, there is Mahesh Dham, the abode of Lord Shiva, which is a difficult place to understand. It's not the material world and it's not the spiritual world. And then beyond that is Haridam. Lord Brahma explains this in his Brahma Sanhita phrase. Haridam means the abode of Lord Hari, Vaikuntha. So the Bhagavatam is presenting you an assortment pack of location possibilities for you. Where do you want to go? By your choices, you're already in the material world, but you can go other places. What is your destination? Haridam, of course, has as its top Goloka Vrindavan, the personal abode of Lord Krishna. What we're hearing about today is a combination of heavenly planets' history and Earth history. So Mars Bharat, from whom the Earth planet is named, Bharatavarsha, and particularly India is known as Bharatavarsha, being the most important place on the planet Earth because of so many holy places, Tirthas, and the personal facsimile abodes of the Lord, Vrindavan, Navadvip Dham. So, Mars Bharat, he had three wives. Kshatriyas, kings, are allowed to have more than one wife. The requirement, however, is that they have to be able to maintain one of the symptoms in Kali Yuga, spoken by Shukadeva Goswami in the 12th canto. Bharam Katumba, Bharanam. Daksha Katumbam Bharanam. A man in Kali Yuga is known as very expert if he can maintain one wife and a few children. He's known as Daksha. Very powerful. Ooh, just see how nicely you're taking care of one wife and two children. So difficult. That's why in this day and age, in so many households, both the husband and wife have to work. This is the age of Kali. Even in 50 years ago, it wasn't like that. It was quite normal. I remember growing up in New York City in the 50s, in the whole neighborhood, very few mothers worked. They all stayed at home, taking care of their kids, training their kids, cooking meals, and that all changed by the time the 70s came around. So, in Vedic civilization, these kings had power, material power, and sometimes spiritual power. So they had the ability to maintain more than one wife and keep more than one wife happy. Some of you married men may agree that it's not always easy to keep one happy. What to speak of three? Therefore, when you read about Lord Krishna in Dwarka having 16,108 wives, you wonder, what's going on here? Is this mythology? Who could handle that? But Krishna is showing you, I'm going to give you my Naralila. I'm going to give you my human-like pastimes. My pastimes will resemble human activities, but there'll always be something inconceivable about them. So I'm going to marry, I'm going to have household affairs, just like a normal human being. But I'm going to do it 16,108 times. And each of those 16,108 wives will have her own Krishna. As Prabhupada would always explain, it's not that each of Krishna's wives in Dwarka had to wait 16,108 days and nights to be with him. No, he expanded himself so that each wife had her own Krishna. Each wife was satisfied. Of course, Lord Chaitanya explains when speaking about ecstatic love of Krishna to Sanatana Goswami. He explained that in Dwarka, amongst the wives of Krishna, there's something known as prema vaichitya. That means even though they had Krishna, he's right there with them. Night and day, they still were fearing separation. This is something that goes on, especially amongst the queens of Dwarka. And therefore, in Krishna Lila, there's that chapter of where you read about the queens of Dwarka expressing their fear of separation from Krishna, even though he's right there. So, the challenge is often raised, why does Krishna need 16,108 wives? What kind of God is this? Those who do not understand Bhagavad Dharma, they condemn this. What? Your Hindu God, he has 16,108 wives. How ridiculous. Of course, they'd love to be able to do the same thing. This is envy. Krishna has the ability to please his devotees in that way. He actually doesn't need any wife, but just to please his devotees, he takes on 16,108 wives. Because he's conquered by his devotees' pure devotional service. He doesn't need, he doesn't want, but he allows himself to be conquered by bhakti. So just to please devotees who want to relate to him in that way, he takes on 16,108 wives. And also to teach human beings. Look, you're so attracted to your mundane family affairs. Just look at me, look what I'm doing. Become attracted. How can you ignore this? You have your puny household affairs. I have 16,108 palaces in Dwarka for each wife. Look and be attracted. This is Krishna mercifully trying to catch our attention, while at the same time being the supreme enjoyer. So, sometimes those who are ignorant or envious, they accuse. Your Hindu god Krishna must be very lusty, as if they can control their senses. 16,108 wives. Isn't that the sign of someone who is totally mad with lust? But if you want to accuse Krishna of being lusty, you have to be accurate in your accusation. You have to accuse him of being unlimitedly lusty. Because whatever Krishna does, he has no limitation. Now, you can't conceive of unlimited lust. Just a little bit of lust you know about drives you crazy. And you can't fulfill it. In case you don't know by now. Or in case you have any plans. It's like a fire that is never satisfied, no matter how many drops of ghee you put in the fire. At yagyas, you can watch the sacrificial yagya. The flames of the fire. The more drops of ghee you put on the fire, the higher the fire gets. It loves it. Similarly, we never will put out the fire of material desire by trying to satisfy those desires. Elsewhere in the ninth canto, Yayati found that out. He told in his account of his past history, he told his wife Devayani, we have been enjoying sense gratification for thousands of years, and I'm still not satisfied. In other words, let this be a lesson. Yayati was so lusty that because he was cursed to become prematurely old, he shamelessly asked his youngest son, give me your youth and you take my old age so I can enjoy. So he took his youngest son's youth and carried on with his sense gratification for thousands of years before realizing I'll never be satisfied in this way. It's impossible to be satisfied in this way. He came to his senses. He told his wife, as you heard a few weeks ago, the story about the he-goat and the she-goat. And then he returned his youngest son's youth to him and fully absorbed himself in bhakti. So, Krishna, we can't conceive of unlimited lust. We are tortured by such tiny desires. And even though our desires are so tiny comparatively, we can't fulfill those tiny desires. Because we're limited, tiny potency. But Krishna, whatever he does, is unlimited. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is pointed out that the main characteristic of Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is that he has unlimited desires and he has the unlimited resources to satisfy his unlimited desires. This is called Suraja Lakshmi. Krishna is completely independent in successfully satisfying unlimited desires. He depends on no one for satisfying his unlimited desires. And he successfully satisfies all of his unlimited desires, which are ever increasing. Krishna's desires are ever increasing. And his ability to satisfy his desires are ever increasing. This is the Supreme Personality of God. This is Bhagavan. Mars Bharat, successful Kshatriya king, the Shastra describes here, had three pleasing wives. He had the ability to maintain more than one wife. In this way, every qualified woman was guaranteed to have a qualified husband. That was the Vedic system. It's more, not so much about the man gets to gratify his senses with more than one. It's about the man who's qualified can give maintenance and protection to more than one. But we hear it, we think, ooh, three wives. What a festival. But actually, the purpose of the Vedic system is that the qualified man gives shelter, gives maintenance. That means money. Gives children, gives adequate home facilities for three wives, all of which obviously aren't going to live in one room. So we misunderstand the Vedic system. We think it's an opportunity for multifarious sense enjoyment. That's why Srila Prabhupada, in considering applying the Vedic system in the West, said it wouldn't work. He said, if ISKCON offered the facility to men of having more than one wife, it would just be a contrivance for sense gratification, because no one understands that the Vedic system has its purpose of maintenance, protection, and shelter. Maharaj Bharat had three pleasing wives, but there was a complication. That's the way it is in the material world. The best made plans crumble. What happened? All three of his pleasing wives gave birth to children who didn't resemble the king. Now, that's not such a big deal these days, but in Vedic culture, the wives were very afraid. We've been faithful, we've been chaste, but our children don't look like the father. Therefore, what's everyone going to think? They're going to think that we have been unfaithful. And therefore, the king is going to reject us. Material life gets complicated, even in times of Vedic civilization. You just can't get everything perfectly right in the material world. Only in Krishna Leela is everything perfectly right. And you see that when the Lord comes to this world and demonstrates his pastimes. So, some of these queens, out of fear that they would be rejected by their husband because their children didn't look like their husband, they decided to kill their own children. Very drastic step. We don't get any more information than that, except that King Bharat, he was very frustrated because he couldn't get a son. The Bhagavatam doesn't describe how the wives killed their children, at what stage did they kill them. In any case, it does say that King Bharat was very frustrated because he wanted a son. So he performed a yajna. That is the proper system for progressing in the material world. Of course, in the age of Kali, these yajnas don't work. There's only one yagya that works. Yagyai Sankirtana Prayai Yajantihi Srimedusa. Only the Sankirtan yagya works. So the king performed his yagya to various demigods to get a son. And satisfied by that yagya, the demigods gave him a son named Bharadwaja. The demigods presented him a son. That means from the heavenly planets, the demigods brought down someone and said, here he is, here's your son. What's the history of that Bharadwaja? What's the history of his birth? Why are the demigods presenting him to an earthling like Bharat Maharaj? Now we'll hear that origin of Bharadwaja in today's verses. Again, you'll see that even on the heavenly planets, there's complications, what to speak of on earth. You'll see that the demigods can make mistakes. And indeed, it was a very major mistake done by the demigod named Brihaspati, who is the priest of the demigods and a very learned scholar. What does Brihaspati do? Somehow or other he becomes attracted by his brother's wife, who's named Mamata. Not only did he make the mistake of being attracted by his brother's wife, but he became attracted to her at the time she was pregnant from her husband. So Brihaspati desired, as the Shastra says here, desired to have sexual relations with her. She's already pregnant. And we read that the son that's within her womb forbid this. You're dealing with demigods. You're dealing with personalities who have much more power than human beings. But even in other yugas than Kali, earthlings had more power than they have now. So the son within Mamata's womb forbid Brihaspati, who was maddened by lust, to do such an abominable thing as be attracted to his brother's wife and want to have relations with her at the time she was pregnant. And the son within her womb forbid this, but Brihaspati, maddened by lust, cursed the boy within the womb and forcibly discharge semen into the womb of Mamata. In other words, what's so great about the heavenly planets? And Prabhupada, he makes sure you don't miss the point. Giving guidance, giving instruction, giving knowledge in his famous Bhaktivedanta purports, Srila Prabhupada writes, the sex impulse is so strong in this material world that even Brihaspati, who is supposed to be the priest of the demigods and a very learned scholar, wanted to have sexual relationship with his brother's pregnant wife. This can happen even in the society of the higher demigods. So what to speak of human society? The sex impulse is so strong that it can agitate even a learned personality like Brihaspati. So this is why we take care in ordering our human relations. This example of Brihaspati in the heavenly planets lets you know why there should always be caution in male-female relationships. A real civilized society always has protocols and structures of caution built in so that men and women do not succumb to this powerful impulse which has victimized even Brihaspati in the heavenly planets. And here he is forcing his way into the womb of his brother's wife, even though she's pregnant, even though she's his brother's wife, even though the son within the womb has forbidden this. So now what happens? Mamata gave birth to an illegitimate son. We don't hear what happened to the son that was already in her womb that was cursed by Brihaspati. So Mamata, she's fearful that my husband is going to reject me. Again, life gets so complicated. Sometimes we're involved in complications even against our own will. This is what it's like living in the material world. And it's very excruciatingly painful to be involved in material complexities that you didn't cause. But then you have to take the blame for coming to the material world. Great theologians of so many religions are racking their brains. Why do bad things happen to good people? How could someone who had no intent to be involved in a complication gets involved? How can God allow this? But ultimately, we always have to take the blame because we voluntarily came to the material world in spite of Krishna's warnings. And we stay in the material world, although the super soul in our heart is always inviting us, please turn to me, get out of this illusion of mine. So Mamata is caught in a complication. A complication that is, from her side, is involuntary. Now she's fearful that her husband is going to reject her, so therefore she decides to give up the child. We don't get the details here of how she gave birth, etc., etc. Bhagavatam obviously doesn't consider it important. So the demigods are now going to resolve the situation. They're going to enter into the situation and try to patch things up because this is a heavenly planet scandal. How's the child even going to get a name? There's a Vedic system for giving a child a name, but the name has to do with your family line. But what is this child's family line? The child's illegitimate. So the demigods have to give the child a name because they want to resolve the complexity of this scandal. Meanwhile, Brihaspati, he's still carrying on like a madman. He's telling Mamata in today's verse, "You foolish woman, although this child was born from the wife of one man through the semen discharged by another, you should maintain him." In other words, Brihaspati's telling her, you should go on maintaining the child, even though it's my illegitimate son. So they're having a bit of a dispute. Upon hearing this, Mamata replied, "O Brihaspati, you maintain him." And in this way, they both left. Both Brihaspati and Mamata left and left the child alone. The demigods had given the child the name Bharadwaja. So here we have a child born improperly. The mother doesn't want to maintain him. The father doesn't want to maintain him. They're having, mother and father are having an argument over who should take responsibility for the child. The demigods are encouraging Mamata to maintain the child. You're the mother after all. We realize the child was born through complications that were out of your control. Still, you should maintain the child. But Mamata considers the child to be useless because of the child's illicit birth, and therefore she left him. So now the demigods, known as the Maruts, they're going to step in and maintain the child. They're balancing things out. It's a problem in the heavenly planets. So then, remember, Maharaj Bharat was frustrated he couldn't get a son because even though he had three pleasing wives, they had bore children who didn't resemble Maharaj Bharat, and these wives were afraid they would be rejected by their husband, and so they killed their own sons. So Bharat on earth has no son. So the demigods, known as the Maruts, who are maintaining the illegitimate child of Brihaspati and Mamata, they're going to take the child and give the child to Maharaj Bharat on earth. In this way, although the child is born from heavenly planets complications, it's going to live on earth. So Srila Prabhupada takes this opportunity to point out in the purport that from this verse it is understood that those who are rejected from the higher planetary system are given a chance to take birth in the most exalted families on this planet Earth. You may remember in Bhagavad Gita, the destiny of the unsuccessful transcendentalist. There are two categories. Someone who has performed yoga for a short period of time, and someone who has performed the bhakti yoga for a long period of time. Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita was very apparently perturbed. He said to Krishna, "All right, someone takes up the practice to please you and they can't sustain. What's their position? It seems to me they don't enjoy materially and they don't enjoy spiritually. They have no standing, just like a cloud separated from another cloud and driven away by the wind." So what is the fate of the unsuccessful yogi? Everything is there in Bhagavad Gita. So Krishna explains how, if you have practiced his yoga system, his bhakti yoga system, for a short period of time, that means you give up due to weak-mindedness. You give up because you can't control your mind, and that means your senses go out of control. Or you make offenses, you do something that disrupts your spiritual life. Your spiritual life stops in this lifetime. But chine punye marchalokam vrishanti. Later in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains how there's an up and down procedure in the universe. People are going up from the earth to the heavenly planets. People are falling down from the heavenly planets to earth. But the fate of the unsuccessful yogi who practices bhakti for a short time is that he or she takes birth in Shuchinam Shimatam Gehe Yoga Brashtapachai. You take birth in the family of Shuchi, a real Brahmana family. Not necessarily a Vaishnava Brahmana family, but a family dedicated to spiritual culture, Vedic culture. Or you take birth in a family with Sri, with opulences, a rich family. In any case, your birth will not be as an ordinary human being. Just as this boy, Bharadwaja, appeared on earth as the son of Maharaj Bharat, who was the emperor of the whole earth planet. Obviously, the boy took birth in the most exalted family on the planet Earth. Then Krishna explains what happens to someone who practices the bhakti system for a long time and somehow or other slips up, somehow or other doesn't complete the process. So Krishna explains that that person gets the rarest birth in the material world. The person takes birth in the family of transcendentalists, and spontaneously, automatically, from birth, the child becomes attracted to the bhakti lifestyle. So in this way, Krishna is giving reassurance. What you do will never be lost. Now, we can finish up our business in this lifetime, but it takes determination and focus. It's true that Srila Prabhupada once said that so many of his followers would go to the heavenly planets because they did so much sacrificial service for ISKCON, but they couldn't maintain following the standard. So they'll go to the heavenly planets because of their valuable service to Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. Even you go to the heavenly planets, though, you can't stay there. You have to fall back down when your stay in the heavenly planets is up. So Krishna gives you that overview in Bhagavad Gita, constantly going up, coming down, going up, coming down. Krishna says, what's the use of that? It's like part of your life you're living in Remuera, or now I hear Westmere is the richest suburb in Auckland. You spend your whole life living in Westmere, and then suddenly you have to move to Otara. I remember when I first came to New Zealand in 93, and so they're looking for a car to use. So the car dealer was in Otara, so I went to Otara to get a car. When I got back, some boys were saying, ooh, you went to Otara. Oh, a very dangerous place. 6 months ago, there was a murder there. They're telling that to someone from New York City. 6 months ago, there was a murder in Otara. Ooh. Very terrifying place. So, you can just imagine. You're a rich family living in Remuera or Westmere, and then all your income is wiped out, share market crash, or you were swindled or something, business is collapsed, and you have to live in Otara. And then you get more money, and you can move back to Westmere. Then you lose your money again, back to Otara. So Krishna says, what is the use of this? You don't belong in Westmere or Otara. You belong with me in my abode. But for devotees who are attached to being devotees and have material enjoyment, the heavenly planets are waiting. So you may wonder, why all this description of the heavenly planets? How does it relate to people today? It does relate to our devotees. It doesn't relate to the masses of people in Kali Yuga, who will be lucky if they get a human form of life in the next birth. I was once on a walk with Srila Prabhupada, and a devotee asked him, what will be the fate of most persons for their next life? The fate of most persons alive, most human beings alive on the planet Earth today. And Srila Prabhupada replied, most of them are heading for an animal birth. So you may wonder then, what's all this relevance? What's the relevance of talk about the heavenly planets? The heavenly planets are an option. They're there. Although they're not going to be seen practically by anyone in Kali Yuga except devotees who have material desires. They can go to the heavenly planets. So in this way, just see how complete Srimad Bhagavatam is. It gives you the complete picture. It gives you complete understanding of all the realms of existence. And this way you can make your choice. And that's what Krishna wants you to do. Make your choice, because there can't be ecstatic love of Krishna without free choice. So Krishna makes you aware of the full range of possibilities and then says, come to me. He invites you to join his lila. So the perfected devotee who's going back to Godhead, as you know, first joins with Krishna in his lila in whatever particular universe Krishna is having his pastimes. And there you get trained up to participate in his lila. And then you go to Goloka Vrindavan. Or you may go to Dwarka, whatever your constitutional position is. But generally speaking, followers of Lord Chaitanya, their goal is Goloka Vrindavan. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.